I want you to think back to when you first started in sales. Now, for some of you, that wasn't too long ago, so that's going to be real easy. Other people like me, man, that was a long time ago, like back when I had hair. And I want you to think back to how and why you were taught to ask really good questions when you meet with a potential client. Now, many of us, we were taught, well, at a real basic level, we ask questions to get information. Well, duh, right? Sales 101. Then maybe moving a little bit beyond that, we were taught to look for the quote-unquote pain. But I'm here to tell you that you've only been given part of the truth. And today, we're going to talk about why you need to be asking kick-ass questions beyond the information and beyond looking for the pain. My name is Paul Castain, and I'm the author of the Your Sales Playbook blog and your host for the Sales Playbook podcast. I've personally trained over 10,000 sales reps, sales leaders, and business owners to sell more. So get your playbooks ready because school is now in session. So I'm sure many of us wouldn't disagree when it comes to good questions, the purpose behind it, the whole reason why we're asking kick-ass questions in these meetings with potential clients is so that we can get information, we can hopefully uncover the quote-unquote pain. Why? So that we can present a more meaningful solution. Now, there's nothing wrong with that thinking, but I'm here to tell you that there's just a lot more to it, but also there is a potential flaw in that thinking. So let's address the flaw in the thinking, and then we're going to get into a good five or six ideas that really underscore this whole premise of the purpose of good questions being a lot more than the information and the pain. So again, if you're thinking about questions and the reason why you're asking them when you meet with a potential client to get information and to uncover the pain, here's the flaw in that argument. If you are spending too much time on a certain type of information, now, many of us, when we're talking about a potential project, we're talking about the specs, right? The size and the colors and the quantity, even like the delivery date and how we're shipping it and where, all this kind of stuff, right? All of the specs. Those things are very, very important. But nobody ever gets excited. Nobody ever gets emotionally charged up over a question that has to do with the specs. So it's necessary to the whole process, right? We have to know those things, but we can't spend an inordinate amount of time on them. We can't harp on just spec questions. So the very first thing that I want you to do today before I dive in on the other things is I want you to start thinking, and as the week progresses and the week after that, I want to raise your awareness to the types of questions that you're asking when you meet. I don't care if it's face-to-face or if you're doing this on kind of a conference call or a Skype or a WebEx, whatever it is that you would call your meeting with a potential client. Heck, it might even be just when you're calling up and you're qualifying a customer. I want you to think about how much time you're spending on spec-related questions versus other higher caliber questions that can lead to a more meaningful exchange of information, as well as just, you know, a higher probability of you making that sale. So that's the first thing. The other flaw in this whole argument of looking for the pain. Of course you look for the pain, just like before. I mean, yes, of course you need information in general. But the problem is, you know, many times when we're focused so much on finding the pain, which, by the way, you know, in our defense, this has been like beaten into us by all the sales trainers that came before Paul Castain and the sales trainers that trained me, all of the sales books and things like that. We were taught, you got to find the pain. And many times when we're talking about something, we're telling about a challenge, well, you didn't find the pain. Like, you know, like, how dare you? Hang your head in shame, sales professional. You didn't find the pain. But what a lot of people are not telling us is a little something called reality. Not everyone is experiencing pain. And when your questions are almost to the point, like focused, like to the point of obsession on finding pain, and there's no pain existent with that potential client and in their business and in their world, you leave with a whole lot of nothing. So my suggestion is, yes, just like before with the spec questions, of course you have to ask spec questions. Of course you have to be getting information in general. But now when we talk about the pain, of course you should be looking for the pain. But you'd better have questions in there that also uncover opportunity and lead them on a path of self-discovery to see opportunity. And those are two very different things. There's a lot of sales trainers that would love to argue with me and say that, yes, but, you know, if we remove the pain, that is the opportunity. Yes, there must be pain first. Well, we can convince them that there's pain. Well, I mean, you know, in my world, you know, I kind of call that bullshitting somebody. So if they don't have real pain, I'm talking realistic, like this is like, you know, we're not going to go and repackage something into something it's not. And you're focused just on finding that pain. You're screwed. And they're screwed too because they don't get the benefit now of what you have to offer. So my advice to you before we even, like I said, jump in is to start reflecting back on your meetings. Number one, are you spending a lot of time, a little bit too much time talking about specs and just focusing your questions on getting information? And are you focusing too many of the questions that you have? When you actually look at the questions you're asking, become aware of them, and maybe take a few minutes after each appointment you have this week and think back, well, the questions I asked today, were they mostly trying to find if there's pain? So what you want to do then is adjust and make sure that you're not focused on all these things with specs and not focused just on finding the pain. Now, having said that, giving you that little sermon, let's talk about why we want to ask kick-ass questions. Again, moving beyond specs, moving beyond information, moving beyond hunting for the pain. The first reason why you ask kick-ass questions is because great questions allow you to take control. I want you to think about something. The person asking the questions in a conversation is generally the person who's in control of that conversation. Now, when I say control, many of you, you know, it's kind of like word association. We hear something like that, and you might have a real negative image of the word control. Control can be a very negative image. In this context, those of you who know me, that's not what I'm about. I'm not into, you know, doing some kind of little Jedi mind trick on people here. What I'm all about is taking control so that we can focus on the things that actually matter, not just the price, by the way. And also, too, we want to focus that conversation so that not only is it focused in the right direction, but again, it can give us the right information so that we can offer the right solution. So my question to you is, are you asking enough questions to take control? And are you asking questions that are focusing that conversation in the right direction? You know, it's funny because when we look at relationships, right? When we look at good relationships and we dissect them, generally good relationships are the result of good communication. Right, I'm sure nobody's going to disagree and say, "Ah, Castain, I was kind of with you on this whole pain and spec question thing." But you know, what are you kidding me? So, great relationships are generally the result of great communication. Now, great communication is generally the result of great questions because great questions inspire great conversation. So really the quality of our relationships and the quality of our dialogue and our discussions and the quality of the needs analysis is going to be in the quality of the questions that we ask. So for now, one of the things I want you to think about is, am I asking enough questions to take control? Now, also too, and this is kind of difficult, and you know I joke around a lot about asking your ego to leave the room while you ponder something your Uncle Paul is going to throw at you. So, you know, let's kind of, you know, like cling to that for a moment. Ask your ego to leave. Have your ego grow legs. Come on, ego, leave. Grow legs. And I want you to really think about the meetings that you've been having. And you guys know you're safe with me. I can't even hear you anyway. I'm not going to sit here and go, aha, I tricked you. I wanted to make you feel like shit today. I just think that sometimes we have to have a reality check. And you don't need another person in your life telling you everything's going to be okay when it's not. So we have to have a little reality check here. The bulk of the meetings that you've been having with potential clients, do you feel like you're losing control? Do you feel like they're focusing too much on price? Do you feel like, you know, almost from the time you opened your mouth and said, okay, you know, the purpose of today's meeting is blah, 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 and blah, you started getting hit with objections or maybe questions that really in the whole scope of things really weren't important? And really, and here's another thing too. Did you ever feel that you've lost a deal for the wrong reasons? Now, that one really should hit home with a lot of us, because I'm going to tell you right now, I'm a sore loser. I definitely am. And, you know, I don't like losing at all. But I can stomach losing a little bit better if I know that I showed up properly and I played my best. See, I can stomach it a little bit better. I'm still going to be a sore loser, though. I mean, who am I kidding, right? But I have to tell you, if you look back and you look back on some of the deals that you've lost, and if you agree with me that maybe you lost them for some of the wrong reasons, or this potential client was harping on something, or they were misunderstanding something or whatever, many times this could go back to the quality of the questions you were asking in your needs analysis. And also, in general, a sense that you did not control the flow of that information and direct the flow of discussion in the right direction. Again, this doesn't mean talking over people. This doesn't mean shutting them down. It just means that asserting yourself and asking some questions that really have to be asked. I think that's very, very important. So that's item number one. The very first benefit that I can tell you, and there's a lot of them, is this idea that we can take better control. So number two, this one, I actually just did a blog post on this a few days ago over on yoursalesplaybook.com. But a lot of people miss this kind of hidden benefit of asking kick-ass questions. And when we ask kick-ass questions, and part of the reason why we ask kick-ass questions is that we want to develop a higher level of rapport and credibility. And really, I could do a podcast on that topic, rapport and credibility. If I were to ask you right now, well, how do you establish like rapport, and what are you doing to establish rapport? The standard textbook answers seem to be things like, well, you know, what I do is I look around the desk for pictures of kids and pictures on the wall. Maybe I can see interests if they're into golf, or maybe it's the proverbial, you know, like mounted fish on the wall or whatever it is. Like if you visited me at Castain Training Systems, to the right of my desk, there are two guitars there. And they're not there for to inspire conversation, because nobody comes to visit me at Castain Training Systems. It's not what happens with my line of business. Everything for me is just, it's really done on conference calls and me visiting places and things like that. But they're actually there for me, and just for the hell of it, because I'm an open book, I'll tell you why I have them there. They're there to remind me to have fun. And also, I still do a tremendous amount of calling. And I what I like to do is I like to break up my activities. So it's kind of a reward for me when I make a certain amount of calls in a call burst. So it might be I'm doing a 25-minute call burst. What I'll do is I'll say to myself, okay, at the end of that 25 minutes, what I'm going to do is I'm going to pick up that guitar and I'm going to do like 5 minutes of my scales or whatever it is, just to kind of free up my mind a little bit, keeps me fresh with the guitar. And I find that I just get a lot more done that way. So it's just kind of a side thing. But anyway, so one of the things, again, when it comes to rapport and credibility, we think about looking around the office for all these things and common interests and all that. There's nothing wrong with that. Again, I'm not being a wise ass here. I believe it's the truth. I also think it's very typical. It's a very typical approach to establishing rapport and credibility. And there are other ways to do it, even ways that are a lot better and ways that sound a lot more genuine. But for now, I want you to think about the quality of your questions. The quality of your questions could make a very, very big difference in how people see you. Do you think people judge you on what you say? right? All of us are going to say, yeah, right? You know, I mean, there's a lot of ways people judge us, how we look, how we act, what we say, how we say it, with whom we say it, where we say it, and what others are saying about us. I call those the seven judgments. So people are always judging us. But really, as part of what you're saying, it's not just what you're saying and the statements that you're making. It's the questions that you're asking. You know, one of the stories that I like to tell when it comes to the quality of questions and how people can really ascend to a much higher level of credibility is that every year, it's around this time, it actually starts to me in November, I have this allergy, it turns out. And this allergy, right now, I'm actually fighting it. It just forces me to cough like you wouldn't believe. And for years, there was all different types of theories on what was causing it for me. I mean, the easy theory was, okay, Castaigne, you smoke cigars. You probably smoke more than the average person. There you go, right? That's kind of the easy way out. That's kind of like a surface question. And there was even some other people, other physicians that I went to that thought maybe it was asthma or something like that, and they prescribed things, didn't go away. So went to a different physician, and I'll never forget, asked me the questions, hey, you know, what's triggering this? And where, you know, I want you to think back. It was almost like hypnosis. Think back. Where are you when it happens, Castaigne, right? And it turned out that the thing that usually triggers it for me, it's not when I go outside and have a cigar or I'm out in the cold or whatever, or even when I'm talking for long, you know, like lengthy, you know, amounts of time. I realized that many times, because I love my coffee, it's when I open up the container that has my Starbucks in it, because I love my Starbucks. Maybe it's Starbucks coffee. I would hate for that to happen. But anyway, I open it up. And the minute I catch a whiff of that, it usually starts. But see, right there even would be great for me to know, right? But this doctor went further and said, okay, so is this mostly happening to you in the morning? I go, yeah, it's when I drink the bulk of my coffee. And she said, well, I have a silly question for you, but you know, there's a reason behind it. And she asked me, you know, when you have that first cup of coffee in the morning, do you have something in your stomach already? Have you eaten something? And I said, no. And she was explaining this thing to me. Forgive me, folks, for sounding like an idiot, because I just, like, when it comes to medical and it comes to, like, mathematical things, I have, like, tumbleweeds and laughing idiots on that side of my brain. But it's like this, I think they call it, and it's like this acronym for something. And it's a horrible sounding thing. It actually sounds like a freaking STD that she talked about. It's like called GERD, and it's some kind of, you know, acid reflex type of thing, or some kind of acidy thing. But anyway, the bottom line is, like, you can tell how serious I am about correcting it, because once she said, like, it had something to do with coffee, it's like, and we're done. But the whole point is that she said, all right, here's what I want you to do. What I want you to do before you have your first cup of coffee in the morning, get something in your stomach, even a piece of toast, or have your cereal or whatever it is, then have your cup of coffee. And then she also prescribed, you know, some allergy medication, which, like I probably should be more serious about taking. I'm not big on taking any kind of meds. And work like a freaking charm, man. I'm telling you. It's like, that's how I started. Having a piece of toast, then I have my Starbucks. Man, I am golden. But here's the point. She asked the question. The other people, they didn't ask. And when people ask you a really good quality question, you look at them very, very differently. And what I tell people all the time, it's really unfortunate that it just comes down to these professions. But many times when we're having like a roundtable discussion, or I'm doing like an on-site training, and we're having just an open discussion about scenarios where we as sales professionals have been asked really, really good questions. And many times, aside from the medical profession, because, like, I mean, it would be kind of like malpractice, like, for them not to ask the good questions. Many times, like, we'll hear about people in, like, financial services that have asked us, like, really, really good questions about our future and expenses and projections and things like that. And also close related life insurance. We'll see it there. And yet, think about the bulk of us right now. or the bulk of you listening to this podcast right now, you're in all these other professions that never seem to get mentioned and never seem to be synonymous with asking kick-ass questions. So the other reason, again, why we're asking kick-ass questions is because we want to develop that level of rapport and credibility. And it's not just talking about the pictures and the kids and the common interests. It's asking questions that make people stop and look at you like the expert you are. So here's my question to you. I want you to look at the questions that you've been asking. Do they underscore your level of expertise? Are there questions in there that people are going to step back and say, wow, nobody asked me that question, or wow, that's a really good question? Now, this one is kind of an unfair question for me to ask you, because this is something even under the greatest of circumstances realistically isn't going to happen. But do you get compliments on your questions? Right? I mean, I wish I lived in a world that, like, you know, we'd always get complimented on it. But do you hear, like, really good feedback? You know, one of the things you can do too to work on the quality of your questions is you can get together with your sales team. And sales leaders, you know, if you're in charge of facilitating your team sales meeting, I'm really not a fan of talking about administrative things. To me, that's an email. You don't need to pull people out of the field for an administrative type of thing unless it's really, really important. And, like, you have to explain it to them, and maybe they have to, like, sign off on it or something like that. And I'm really not big on spending a lot of time on going around the table talking about everybody's numbers and projections and all that. I'm probably the most difficult person for saying this, but to be quite honest with you, if I'm on your sales team, I don't give a shit what Mary's going to sell. And, you know, I could give a flying, you know what, begins with the word F, you know, what Stan is going to sell and everything else. And, you know, I also don't want to hear a lot of long-winded war stories, because to me, there's really no money in that. You're pulling me away from my money. And I want value if we're going to do that. And one of the ways that you create value in your sales meetings is getting the collective brain power of that team working on something and getting it around a challenge or a problem. One of the things you can do is have everybody come in with the questions that they typically ask and maybe go around the table or take turns on the phone and talk through some of them and kind of, you know, have the team critique them and get some feedback. Maybe to go a step further, have everyone send to you as a Word doc the questions that they're asking, or maybe as a result of this little, like, powwow that you guys have everybody come up with, you know, 20 questions or whatever it is, send it to you or your assistant. Compile one big PDF of everyone's answers. There'll be some duplication. But I mean, if you have just even 10 people on your team, you can have 100 to 200 questions that people can pick and choose from. So I think that would be a good exercise for you. So let's go to the next benefit of asking kick-ass questions. Great questions inspire discussion. And I think this is true in any setting or format. A good question inspires a discussion, just in its most basic sense. From the time we were little, we were taught. You remember, like, when you're little, like, you know, Paul, you know, that man is asking you a question, or, you know, your teacher, I'm asking you a question, right? So it really inspires discussion, and it is true in any setting or format. So let me give you a few different formats, kind of going off a little bit on a tangent, but, like, I want to give you the information regardless of what you think. At the end of your emails, start ending, you don't have to do it all of them, start ending them with a question and make note of your response rate and how it will change. Because now, instead of just, like, barking at people and preaching people and pitching people, you are inspiring a dialogue, because that's what questions do. So start ending your emails, not every one of them, with a question. You can also do this on, like, LinkedIn and status updates. If you're going to comment on a status update, whatever, start using a little technique that I teach. And it's called statement/question. Make your statement, whether it be, hey, great share, Paul, or, hey, Paul, nice article on cold calling. But then end it with a question. So you might go, great share, Paul. You know, what are your thoughts of item number 3? Or, you know, you could ask them a question. You know, is item number 4 really practical in a B2C setting or whatever? But it's interesting because you're making the statement, and that's what everybody else does. But when you ask a question, it inspires an answer. Watch how the dialogue picks up from there. So that's one of the things that I want you to do. Also, too, I want you to understand that in a group setting, like I told you, any setting, this really is true, that good questions inspire discussion. But in a group setting, I think, is when you really see the magic, because you have a lot of quiet ones in group settings, and we misunderstand what that represents. Many times we think the quiet one or quiet ones are the ones without the power, but it just might be that there's somebody who just doesn't shut the hell up. Or maybe they're just used to people talking over them or whatever. But you better believe when you leave that room, they might become quite vocal. Or maybe they just feel funny talking in front of you. Or again, maybe their group dynamic is that, you know, Bob is always going to like lead the discussion and Jane is always going to like, you know, fight to get a word in edgewise and the rest of us are just going to watch. So what I want you to remember is everyone has a story and wants to be heard. But the problem is that usually other people are too busy telling their story to hear them. And usually people are too busy telling their story to ask them, you know, tell me your story, right? And it's not like you're going to say it that way, but it's just kind of in general. Everyone has a story of some sort. So, you know, the other thing about inspiring discussion is that, you know, I don't want you to ever underestimate the power of getting a group of people to talk about the things they just haven't been talking about. We think that people are talking about these things, but sometimes they're just so damn busy just dealing with the business at hand and putting out fires and handling their own customers and employees and growth and growing pains and all this and that, that they just really haven't talked about certain things. And, you know, it's not just talking about certain things. Sometimes it's the difficult conversations. Sometimes it's the proverbial elephant in the room. So I want you to look back and I want you to look at your questions and I want you to pay attention to the types of questions that you're asking. And again, ask your ego to leave the room and answer this question. Am I asking enough questions that are inspiring discussion while I'm there? Am I facilitating a good meeting? Now, we all know that more and more decisions are being made by committee. More and more people are coming into these meetings that we're having. And again, I want to be very clear. I'm not just talking about a face-to-face meeting. I'm talking about you're doing a WebEx, talking about doing a conference call. More and more people are attending those meetings, and there are more and more stakeholders that have a say in this. So I want you to think back on the meetings you've been having, and certainly as you go forward, I want you to take this time to reflect. Am I getting everyone talking? And even to the point, by the way, where you're not putting someone on the spot, but you very politely say, hey, Mark, you know, your opinion is really important to me. I haven't heard from you yet. What are your thoughts about this? Or even like facilitating. And when Mark gives an answer, turning to the group and saying, does anyone else have a different spin? Anyone else want to piggyback? Anyone else want to play, like, anyone want to play devil's advocate? That kind of stuff. Get them talking about these things. Because I will tell you that your average competitor is not. And this is how you score points. And this is how you take a simple question and you move it way beyond looking for pain and getting information. And that brings us to benefit number four. A great question will move you inward. A great question will move you inward. And it will help you to reflect and ponder the what if. And, you know, like in what ways could we do this? And the what else? And things like that. And yes, a good question will have someone ponder the pain that has both been experienced and that maybe hasn't been experienced but could be experienced at some point in the future. Absolutely. I'm not here to disagree with that. But also, a great question will move you inward to ponder opportunity. opportunity that you could be experiencing at a much higher level. And, you know, I think that a great question also, you know, jumpstarts your emotions. And when we jumpstart a potential client's emotions, we get them off of this fence of indifference, where they're just kind of clinging to the status quo. And many times it's safer not to make a decision. Where we just haven't, and that's something I want you to think about too. Let's kind of ask your ego to leave again, and we'll wait. Okay, you know, we're going to wait. All right, my ego's gone. Everybody's egos are gone. All right, so here's the question. Do you find that you have a lot of situations where, or a good amount of them, doesn't have to be a ton of them, enough of them, that people either just go MIA on you and not give you the courtesy of an answer, or perhaps they give you an answer and the answer is, I don't know, which really to me isn't an answer. It's kind of really a prettier packaging of a no. Or are people telling, yeah, you know, we'll revisit this again in the spring? Or many of you just experience this. Yeah, we'll revisit it again at the beginning of the year. Now, here it is the beginning of the year. And you know, now it's the next excuse. Yeah, we're going to do it after Groundhog Day or whatever. So if that's happening, again, it really might point back to the quality of the questions that you're asking and maybe too much of an emphasis on just getting information or just looking for the pain. You're just not getting them excited enough. You're not getting the emotional buy-in. But I'll never forget this years ago, and I think it was Tony Robbins who actually said that. A great question moves you inward. And if you really think about it, and I don't know if there's anyone else out there besides me, I can't be the only person who has an interest in this, who happens to be in the profession of selling. But a lot of the basis of psychoanalysis is centered around the questions that they ask. And like, you know, we'll see these shows and these specials on, you know, psychology and the process and everything else. And they'll talk many times like about, and even in self-improvement, you see it, like they'll talk about this idea or this concept of a breakthrough. And sometimes it's like, you know, they ask that one question, and next time that person breaks down and they're like, you know, talking about how they wet the bed when they were seven and, you know, they killed that frog with a hammer and, you know, whatever the hell it is, right? You know, that, not that that had anything to do with my past, by the way. Not that that just like was a slip there or anything like that. But, you know, you guys get the deal. But even like, I mean, and this, I don't know why I'm laughing, man. I'm like going to hell for sure. But, like, I remember, like, years ago, like, when, like, I don't even know if, like, she still does that show, but years ago there was, like, the Barbara Walters show, right, on, like, ABC at, like, I think it was on, like, 10 p.m. on, like, Friday nights or something like that. And she would ask these questions, man, and 9 out of 10 times, man, she would get her guests crying about some shit that happened. She was great, and she was doing it intentionally. I mean, she was, like, I mean, I think the lady got off on it. Like, she would ask these questions, and she would even like lower a voice, and it'd be like, Paul, you know, we know that your dad was important to you. I mean, you've written about him. He was, and you see, like, she's talking real like soft, like this, getting emotional. You know, what was the hardest thing for you to overcome when he passed away? Next thing is, Barbara, and this, and like you're crying, and it's like, you know, I swear that if I ever had gotten like famous and I was on the Barbara Walters show, man, I'd make that bitch cry. I'm telling you, I would just sit there and go, it didn't mean anything to me. I hated my dad. Well, no, you're right. Yeah, it's just bullshit. I just do that to get blog hits. But let's talk about you, Barbara. You know, like what makes you cry? Right? I get her crying. But anyway. Plus I bet someone that I could say Barbara Walters and bitch in the same sentence. But so that's that benefit to a good question. But for now, and there's a lot more. But let's just go with a fifth one, and I kind of alluded to this before. It facilitates a journey of self-discovery versus, see, I'm still emotional over that Barbara Walters thing. It facilitates a journey of self-discovery versus, you know, subjecting someone to a sales pitch. There's a huge difference between, you know, like the concept of me telling you about it. Because if I tell you about it, you might want to consider it. I can present pretty damn good. But you see, if you get there on your own, you own that idea. It's yours. Nobody convinced you. And when you own it, I think it's pretty hard for you to argue with yourself. Unless you have some kind of multiple personality disorder. And or like to throw objections at yourself. So my question to you is, are you asking questions that facilitate a journey of self-discovery? And my kind of guess here is that many of you aren't. And I'm not here to blame you or make you feel bad. I'm just here to tell you that, you see, this is what happens when you think that the reason why, when you go to that meeting on Monday or Tuesday or someday this week, the reason for my questions is to get information so that I can give them something that means something to them. Or maybe focusing so much on finding pain. So you don't think about shit like this then, if you're busy thinking about that. So my whole purpose today is to, yes, let's acknowledge finding pain is very, very important. And I will also tell you that given the choice between making pain go away and embracing opportunity, people will do more to like avoid that pain than they ever will do to go after opportunity. That doesn't mean, though, that you avoid opportunity. It means that you need to include it in there. You can certainly lead with pain questions, but you should also make sure that you're being thorough enough to go for that. But you really want to look at your questions and just kind of do that little reality check that we've done with every one of these items today. Are you asking questions that are facilitating a journey of self-discovery? Because if you're not, then you really need to start doing that. So these are all the benefits of asking great questions. And again, what we're trying to do today is move your thinking beyond getting information and looking for pain. So now comes the infomercial. We're actually going to be talking about how to ask awesome questions, or actually ask better questions, because I don't want to give away the damn title of what I'm talking about here. This is like we're going to be talking like so much about this in our upcoming webinar, how to ask awesome sales questions. It's all going to be taking place right on your computer screen, so you can join us from your favorite chair in your pajamas for all I care. Hell, I'll be there in my pajamas. I'm going to do like kind of like a Hugh Hefner silk thing, I think. What the hell, right? Kind of like Uncle Paul after hours. Smoke a pipe and look like real kind of, you know, regal. But anyway, here's the plan. Here's what you're going to gain. First of all, we're going to talk about 6 questioning mistakes that I can tell you right now are costing you business. We're going to talk about how to create an entire like arsenal of awesome questions. And part of my definition of an awesome question really would be like part of like the questions your competitors aren't asking. To me, that's part of an awesome question. Asking the questions, like, you can tell when you're asking it, like people looking at you like, yeah, this isn't like a typical question. This is pretty freaking awesome. And getting people to become more engaged in that conversation with you. We're going to talk about 5 different types of questions with examples. And, you know, right now, like, let's just do a timeout on that. If you're like me, you hear 5 different types of questions. You're like, oh, great, man. Is he going to be talking about, like, open-ended versus closed questions? Like, I can't tell you how much I hate that lecture. I hate it. Like, I hated that shit 30 years ago when I first started, because it's one of these things, like, I got it. It's like, to me, it's a one-sentence thing about, like, the importance of asking, like, open-ended questions. But you have some of these asswipes that, like, make an entire training session out of it. I'm not doing that. I'm not even going to be mentioning freaking open-ended questions. To me, you could like take a trip to Google, and you don't have to give me the $99 for the webinar. If that's what you want, go there. Seriously. And like even like if you want to like say to me, like, you know, like you made a lot of money last year and you want to like see like if you can like buy out your Uncle Paul and you want to offer me like $500 or $800 to talk to you about open-ended questions, I'm still not going to do it. I probably would do it for $1,000, because I have to tell you, I'm not so young, but I still need the money. But anyway, we're going to talk about the one type of question that helps you take control. Earlier today, I was talking to you about how you can, a good question allows you to take control. But there is one particular type of question that is like so easy to learn, and it will make such a difference in you taking control. It just immediately lays out the tone. It creates focus, and it's an awesome question. And the other thing that we're going to talk about is the one type of question that dramatically improves your credibility. We talked about that as well today, how good questions can improve our rapport and our credibility. There is one type of question in general that works like a charm. It is an amazing type of question to ask people. And it just gives you some incredible results because of the fact that people see you differently. And it demonstrates your expertise to people. We're going to talk about three questioning flight plans, and I'll explain that in a minute, that help you get better results. And when I say flight plans, it's like really like scenarios where like I take you from start to finish with a questioning sequence that will make a very big difference for you. Like I give you a certain scenario, in this case three different ones, and I take you through. Typically, you could start with this question. These could be some possible follow-up questions. Just adjust them for your industry. Then maybe conclude with these types of questions or whatever. Follow up with these types of questions. So you get the gist of it. We're also going to talk about, and I think this is really the most important point yet, is how to do all these things in a spirit of creating a conversation instead of an interrogation. I mean, I was thinking before I did this podcast today about how many times I have been the recipient of sales questions, right? Where I was buying something for Castain Training Systems or buying something for, the home or whatever it is. And, like these questions that people were asking me, like I kind of felt like I should have like my attorney present. It was like, like am I getting brought up on charges? Like am I getting brought before the congressional like committee on like sales rock stars? Like you want to like strip me of my aspiring sales rock star status? I mean, like that'd be pretty shitty to do. But anyway, see, you got me started. See, that's the deal with questions. You get people started like that. But anyway, to learn more and to reserve your seat, because like no sense in procrastinating. We're going to be doing this on January 26th at 11:30 a.m. Eastern. To learn more and to reserve your seat, I want you to visit yoursalesplaybook.com/question. Note that is singular and not plural. yoursalesplaybook.com/question. With that, I'm Paul Castain from YourSalesPlaybook.com. I am wishing you an incredible week ahead. Go get them. The Sales Playbook Podcast is a Castain Training Systems production. Visit us at www.YourSalesPlaybook.com.